Welcome to Champion Center Podcast. We believe that by continued listening, you can grow relationally, emotionally, physically, and spiritually. Listen in now on this worship experience already in progress.
So mile marker number one, Jesus spoke a word of forgiveness. And he said, Father, forgive them, for they do not know or they don't know what they're doing. Now, we've embraced that word not only as a word spoken for them, but we've taken that word and said, that's my word. Like that's my word. Not only did Jesus forgive people who didn't know what they were doing, but Jesus also forgives us even though we know what we're doing. Forgiveness is not just somebody else's word. Like forgiveness is my word. And forgiveness is meant to take care of everything that's in my past, everything that's in my rearview mirror. Shame, condemnation, stuff that occupies space, pulling me back, holding me back. Like I receive the word of forgiveness. The second words of Jesus were spoken to a criminal who asked Jesus to remember him when he entered into his kingdom. And Jesus' words were a promise of salvation. And here's what he said to him. He said, truly I tell you that today you're going to be with me in paradise. Now for the thief, the promise was paradise. But for you and me, God's promise of salvation is purpose and then paradise. Because his future was only paradise. Like he was wrapping it up here. But for you and I, God's not done with us yet. So salvation is a word that's far bigger than being saved from something. Salvation is about being saved for something. Like not just from, but for. Are you getting this? Anybody glad that God has a plan for your life? Come on, anybody thankful? And then the third words that Jesus spoke on the cross was when he looked down from the cross and he looked at Mary, his mother, and he looked at John the beloved, the youngest disciple, and he said, woman, here is your son, and son, here is your mother. He spoke a word of relationships. And here's what we've talked about thus far, is that the cross redefines our family. Like you might have had a family that's messed up, jacked up, crazy. You might have not known your father growing up. You might have grown up in a foster home. You could be sitting here today and saying, I've never felt like I belong to any family. Well, that's what the cross is meant to do. Like the cross is meant to redefine. And even if your family was good, like they may not be going the same direction you're going. They may not be making the same directions, the same decisions you're making. And so the cross redefines our family. Those who were not family before the cross become family because of the cross. So this week, we enter into what I'm calling the middle miles. The middle miles. These are not the words that were Jesus' first words, and these are not his last words. He hung on the cross for about 6 hours. And during this time, he spoke 7 times. And this weekend, we're going to look at the words that he spoke in the middle. Everybody say in the middle. Say it again, in the middle. Anytime that you're on your way to something better, the greatest opposition is not in the beginning. And it's not when you're close to the finish. The greatest opposition is in the middle. Like, it's really not that hard to start something. Lots of people start things. But you can only finish if you get through the middle. I was in a gym working out, and it was a gym away from home, so I was noticing this couple. I'd never been in the gym before. I noticed this couple that were right next to me, and they're on the treadmill, and I could tell they were kind of new, like in the gym, and the treadmill is just, you know, they're just kind of walking along on the treadmill and just out kind of coasting for a walk. And the trainer came over, and without saying anything, the trainer reached over and started hitting the incline button. Just repeat, boom, 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 and starts going up. And the lady looks at the trainer and rolls her eyes and just, please. She says, please, like. Now, I thought, because we preachers, like, everything turns into an analogy, you know. And I thought about that moment. I thought, you know, just a few days ago or maybe a week ago, she came in here and she hired a trainer and promised to give her money because she had a vision and she wanted to change and she wanted to be healthier, stronger, and better. And now she's on the journey, and the trainer is saying, I'm not gonna leave you where you are. I'm not gonna let you hang out here. And so today it's about to get really real. And I just happen to be a bystander who got to witness the moment. And her attitude's all over the place, and I'm thinking, lady, you're paying for this, like you signed up for this, and you're complaining. But what's happening is she's entering the middle. She's entering the middle. Everybody say the middle. See, in the middle, you don't have the reservoir of energy and confidence that you started with. Even vision leaks in the middle. Like, you have a vision, like, you head to the gym. My vision is, I got a poster up, I got a picture, like, but can I just warn you, that vision leaks once you get on the machine. And once you get under the weight of the intensity in the middle is where you can get your eyes off of where you're going so quick and so fast. In the middle. In the middle, you don't have a second wind yet. And you often get in, you know, in the middle, and the second wind isn't there like you're going to get it in the last mile as you start to see the finish line. That's the middle. When you're in the middle, you're really vulnerable to feelings of discouragement and disillusionment in the middle. So metaphorically, Jesus was in the middle. He was in the middle. He started this journey in the garden where he stood up after praying. Now, this was not just an ordinary day of prayer for him. This was a day where the Bible says he sweat, as it were, great drops of blood, pleading with the Father, could this cup pass from me? Like, could we do this differently? Like, is it possible to get around this season? And then he stands up, and the Bible says he faced Jerusalem. And so today, he's in the middle. He started in the garden, and now he's in the middle. This is the most stress he's felt. This is the most weight he's carried. Let me read it to you in Matthew 27. It goes like this. About 3 in the afternoon, Jesus cried out in a loud voice, my God, why have you forsaken me? The fourth word is a word of abandonment. Like even one of the renderings of this writing, it says, one of the other biblical renderings says, my God, why have you abandoned me? Before we assume that Jesus was abandoned or Jesus was forsaken, let's consider a couple of elements that we have to factor in. First of all, these words are the first line of Psalm 22 in your Bible. Psalm 22 starts off, my God, why have you forsaken me? It was written about 1,000 years before Jesus was crucified. And if you look at it, like you can look at it right now, and you look at it, it provides a detailed description of an innocent man judged as a criminal, beaten, stripped, his clothes were divided, they gambled for his robe, they mocked him, they pierced his hands and his feet, he was crucified. 1,000 years before, Jesus is actually hanging there. So he's obviously quoting the psalmist, like he grew up learning by memory the Old Testament. Now, I don't know if he was doing it because he wanted people to connect the dots and to realize what had just happened was prophetic. It had been prophesied 1,000 years before. I'm not really sure. But you got to factor that in some way and shape and form. But here's secondly, what I want you to understand is that even though it was prophetic, Jesus actually felt forsaken. And I want you to realize today that here in the middle, he felt abandoned. But just because he was feeling forsaken doesn't mean he was forsaken. Are you with me? So just because you feel alone, it doesn't mean you are alone. Like you might be here today and feel defeated. Like you might say, Pastor Kevin, you don't know what I've been through, where I've been, it's like hell on earth for me right now. I'm really going through it. And I'm here to announce, I'm here to remind you, I'm here to encourage you. You might feel defeated, but that doesn't mean you are defeated. You might feel like today you can't go another mile, but greater is he that is in you than he that is in the world. Somebody needs to be reminded that there's a middle. There's a middle in everything. There's a middle in every challenge. Every time you're going somewhere, look at your neighbor and say, I'm going somewhere. Come on, tell somebody, I'm going somewhere. Like anytime you're going somewhere, you're gonna face the middle. You might feel like God's a million miles away when he's actually right there with you, maybe even in you. He's possibly picked you up and carried you and supported you and strengthened you. We gotta get this right. You gotta get this right because feelings are fickle. Feelings are not fact. You got to learn if you're going to mature, you're going to grow, you're going to win in life. You got to understand that feelings are not the truth. Everybody has, do I need to break into the song right now? Feelings. Like I want you to understand and differentiate between what you feel and what really is. Jesus needed to feel forsaken. He needed to feel abandoned. That was the script. That's how it was written. He needed to feel what you and I feel in every single way, including feeling forsaken and feeling like God's a million miles away. He needed to feel that. But just because you feel it doesn't mean it's true. I said, just because you feel it doesn't mean it's true. Hebrews 13:5 says, I will never leave you. God says, I'll never leave you. I'll not leave you on the mountain. I'll not leave you in the valley. I'll not leave you in the tough time. I will never leave you or forsake you. I am with you. How long? I am with you always. Until you cross the finish line. I don't leave you in the middle. In a long distance race, the runner by the name of Molly Huddle, she's like a record holder in the 5K, and Molly Huddle said this. She said, it's the middle that the race turns tough. It's in the middle that the finish seems far off. So maybe you're in the middle. I don't know. I don't know what you might be in the middle of right now. Maybe you began the marriage thinking that you'd always feel the way you felt on your wedding day. And then the babies, and the jobs, and the bills, and the in-laws. Why didn't somebody tell you about the in-laws? The differences between him and you, like you never notice, like you were always on the same page, like when you were dating, and now it's like this stranger that you're waking up with. Like he sees things, he's crazy. How does he think the way he thinks? My God, this, I'm talking about the middle. Sheila and I sat down in a counselor's office one day, and it was our first time to ever go to counseling, and he knew who we were, and he knew about our life, and he knew, and we were on a five-day getaway at a counseling ranch. And so the first morning, he looks at us, and he says, so hey, guys, I know you, I followed you, admire you. Tell me why you're here. And I'll never forget what Sheila said. Sheila said, she looked at him straight in the eye, without even flinching. She said, because we want to finish strong. We want to finish strong. Like, we didn't start to quit. Like, we didn't get in this to hang out in discouragement. Like, we've been married, sir, counselor, for over 30 years right now. But we don't plan on being a statistic. Like, we plan on finishing well. And you know what? That's how you got to be in the middle. Like, you got to have that attitude. You got to have a little bit of a ninja about you in the middle. Like, I want to tell some of you, just because you got married doesn't mean that you'll have a healthy marriage. And some of you need to hear that. Like, some of you need, honestly, you just need a wake-up call. Because you put in all the effort and all the investment and you did everything you could, like before the wedding, and now after the wedding, like you're slacking off, you're getting sloppy, like you're... I just pulled up in your driveway and entered into your living room, and actually I came into the kitchen right now, and you're getting a little bit careless, and you're getting a little bit like you're like, made it. No, you haven't, honey. You haven't made it, sir. You haven't made it. Like, you haven't made it yet. I remember when Sheila and I, not long after we got married, suddenly house slippers appeared on her. And I had never seen her in house slippers. House slippers on my wife are of the devil. Like, they are not of God. And those house slippers found their way into my hands and into a garbage container way underneath the bags in the garage. And she walks around that afternoon, have you seen my house slippers? And I'm like, what house slippers? You have house slippers? Some of you are like, Pastor Kevin, that's so silly. Like, that's so... Well, you can say that if you want. But all I was thinking about was how my mother always wore house slippers. And my wife is not my mom. And I never saw her in the house. I didn't need her to I'm like, where are them other shoes you wore before we were married? Like, I never saw you in them ugly. And you know the only thing, guys, here's what's funny about this story. Here's what's funny about this story is that the truth had to come out because she went and got another freaking pair. Of house slippers. And I had to get honest. I just hate house slippers on you. It doesn't make me really want to come home. Talking about the middle. So sometimes we slack off, right? We get soft, we get easy, and I want to encourage you because some of you right now, you need to get fired up. Like you're in the middle and you're kind of weak and you're like not making those bold, courageous decisions like you used to make. And I want to encourage some of you, like some of you, maybe you started strong as a Christ follower. And then you hit a place where it got real and it wasn't as easy as you thought it was going to be. It's no longer really convenient to follow Jesus and to keep him at the center of your life. And so other things moved in and other choices and options took over, and you're giving away this day for that, and you're giving away your life group, and you're giving away your worship time, and you're giving away your prayer time. It's not as easy anymore. And what I hope you'll understand as you're here today, I'm not here to shame you. I just want to tell you that easy is way overrated. Like easy is way overrated. Whether it's serving God, whether it's marriage, whether it's education, whatever kind of work you're in, easy is way overrated. Being comfortable is way overrated. There is no, hey, hear me out. There is no such place as Hakuna Matata. Like, there is no such, get it off your radar. Unless you are a meerkat or a fat pig, you cannot get to the problem-free philosophy and go where God wants you to go. You got to keep on getting up every day. Come on, leaning into life, giving it your best, and not get discouraged in the middle. Now I'm a church kid. We have shirts and stuff that say church kid on it. I'm a church kid. I was a church kid. I'm proud to be a church kid. I love my grandsons right now, 2 years old, 8 years old. They love church. Like they have church even when we're not at church. They set up church in our house. And my 2 year old, he pretends on the guitar if one's not handy, but we bought him 3 or 4 now. So he goes and gets them, and he turns his baseball cap backward like a worship leader, and he says, "All the overwhelming ever-living." He knows the words better than I do. "Reckless love of God." And we get the video on, and he loves to sing it. He's a church kid. He's a church kid. And I grew up that way. I love it. I love it. I'm thankful for it. But you know, when I was a kid, I wanted to go to church. I wanted to be in church. And then came the middle years. And in the middle years, it's like I started experiencing pushback from some of my friends who didn't go to church. It didn't seem cool to say I go to church. And then there were schedule conflicts and other options that were reaching for me. And I was finding other things that I wanted to do. And then my parents on top of that were telling me as I got my first job, like I needed to bring my tithe. It was one thing when they were giving me an allowance of $10 to bring a dollar, but now, hey, I'm working for this. Like I'm earning this 140 $5, and I'm saving up, like, I want to buy a car, and I want, and my parents are, and like church just kind of changed. It was no longer fun and games and all that. It was like it started to get real. The intensity button was being pushed on me, and it was like, oh, you love Jesus. You say you love Jesus, and yes, son, yes, that's what I'm saying. Like $14.50. Count it out and take it. I was just sure that I needed the money more than God needed it, right? And it was in the middle, what I'm telling you, in the middle was where there were so many things that had to get sorted out, where I could not just talk about my salvation, but start to live my salvation. And I could just not talk about Jesus being first in my life. It was actually putting him first in my life. And it's like something had to rise up, and I didn't always get it right, and I still don't always get it right, but something had to rise up and say, you know what? I am not here to play. I am not here like to bask in the sun of somebody else's goodness. I'm here to make a difference. I'm here to shine a light. I'm here to give. I'm here to serve. I'm here. I want to make my life matter, because someday I'm going to stand before God and I want to hear, well done, well done, like well done. Anybody feel it today? Come on. Anybody want to go there today? Okay. So there was another word spoken in the middle, and that was the word, I thirst. Jesus said, I thirst, or I'm thirsty. I found this interesting because he's the one who separated like the water from the land. And he can create water like out of nothing, and yet he's put himself in this position, this human position. And he could have come out of that at any point. He could have got off the cross and went to a well, but he subjected himself. He was all God and all man. Fully divine, fully human, and that was God's plan for him. And so today he says, I'm thirsty. And I find it ironic that he would make a decision like at that point to just yell out, I'm thirsty, when actually for him, It was so close. But the self-denial of the moment was wired in and hardwired into the idea that I've got somewhere to go and I got something I got to do. And one time Jesus was traveling through Samaria and he was thirsty. And he sat by a well. You remember this story in the Bible? And a woman came up to the well and he asked her for a drink. She was surprised that he asked her, because he's like a rabbi, he's a Jew, she's a Samaritan, and you're not supposed to have a conversation. But then he ends up in a conversation where he describes two wells. He references the well he's sitting on, which is the well of Jacob. And he's saying, now when you're thirsty, like you come and draw water. But then he talks about another well. And he describes that there's another well when your soul is thirsty. In today's culture, by the way, thirsty has another meaning. All of you people over 40, just go with me, will you? Like, everybody under 40 knows exactly what I'm talking about. My wife said last night after the message, she's like, man, I didn't know that about the word thirsty. I'm like, yeah, you can count on me. I'm up on it all. And I'm young, I'm fresh, I keep you going, baby. Like, but for those of you who may not know, when a guy follows girls around the mall, The girls, like, privately might look at each other and put their head his direction and say, he's thirsty. 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 Guys or gals, actually, posting selfies. There's nothing wrong with putting selfies on, but there are some people who put pictures of themselves on social media just fishing for a compliment. And that would qualify in the Urban Dictionary as thirsty. Thirsty, like, do I look good in these shorts? And people would say, thirsty. Thirsty. Y'all are sitting there like, you don't know what I'm talking about. And I think you know better than you're in church, so you're being all holy on me right now. It basically means longing for something, in some cases being desperate. And before you get too condescending and you potentially exclude yourself from the thirsty condition, let me tell you that everyone is thirsty in one way or another. Get this straight. So back to the woman at the well. The woman at the well wasn't quick to acknowledge her thirst. Like when Jesus said to her, hey, go get your husband. She says back, well, I actually don't have a husband. And Jesus said, now wait, let me back up. Can you imagine when she says, I don't have, she's looking at him now, she says, I don't have a husband. And Jesus said, well, you have spoken correctly. You don't have a husband. Can you imagine the ease with which she, wow, he thinks I'm single. Until the next line came out and Jesus says, you actually have five husbands. And the guy you're hanging out right now with and living is not your husband. Can you imagine for her, like she goes from way up here in her deception to just crashing into the reality of the moment. Now let me tell you, Jesus wasn't trying to embarrass her. And he wasn't trying to make her feel bad. He was just trying to get to her real need. And he was trying to tell her that she was drinking at the wrong well. And he wanted to offer her something that she needed in the deepest longings of her soul. Something that another husband wouldn't satisfy. Something that she could have 10 husbands and still not be satisfied. And that's what we do a lot of times. We think that another hookup, another connection, another job, another role, a promotion, a different church. Like we just go around thinking sometimes about all the other, like that's what I want. That's what's gonna really make me happy. And I wanna say to everybody today, if you're thirsty for attention, you need something more than another person's attention. And if you're thirsty for approval, you need more than some kind of award and recognition in your life. Oh, come on. Come on. You guys know how this works. You know how this works. This is really real. Like, if you're thirsty to fit in, you don't need to just fit in. You need a deep sense of validation that only God can give you. You're not going to find it in some kind of award or promotion, or You're not going to find it in another person. Like if you're thirsty to be wanted, if you're thirsty to be admired, if you're thirsty to be loved, like I'll get there and I'll be happy. No, you won't. Because there's two wells. You can go to one well and get your natural water. But the only place you can go to get your spiritual, there is only one well, guys, where you can get your soul and your spirit satisfied. There's nothing wrong with being thirsty. I said there's nothing wrong with being thirsty. You just got to know what well to drink from. And you know what? I'm pretty sure that this weekend there are people here who have been trying different kinds of well. And you've been trying the same thing over and over again. And you're listening to me right now and you're going, wow, I have been going in circles. I have been doing this thing again and again. And I'm always thinking, well, this time's going to be different. And I just want to help you today. I'm not here to condemn you. I'm not here to make you feel bad. I just want to remind you that there is a well of living water. And I want to remind you that over and over and over again, that when life is at its worst, God is at his best. And when you feel like, come on, when you feel like nothing is going to help you. Yes, I am. Like you. The really cool thing about Jesus on the cross, and I'm going to finish with this, that maybe you haven't heard or noticed, was that when he said, I thirst, they went and got a sponge and they put vinegar wine on it and hyssop and they raised it up to him on the cross. Now this, he's craving something, just some sort of moisture. And his lips hit it and then he turns his face away from it. We have to be careful what we drink when we're thirsty. See, the wine vinegar was something it was below and beneath his standards. He would have never drank that as a young man growing up, and that he would have never tasted that. It was seen in his culture as being something that would be stooping down. And his standards were higher than that. And so I think about it and I think, man, what was it in that moment? How did he do that? Like a little bit of a taste and he realized what it is and he's like, I might be really thirsty right now, but that's not something I'm gonna get in my system. That's not something I'm gonna partake of. I'm not going there. How did he do that? I think in my mind, how did he do that? I thought this week, how did he do that? And my mind went to Hebrews chapter 12 and verse 2. And it tells all of us, fix your eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and the perfecter of our faith, who for the joy set before him. Was it possible that in that moment, when he pulls his head back, he's thinking about, I'm almost there. Like I can't mess it up here. Like I can't lower my standards right now. God's got a plan for me. I gotta fulfill that plan. I'm going somewhere. Is it possible that even in that moment, he's recommitting himself to be strong in the middle? Is it possible that even in that moment, he's saying, you know what? I didn't come this far to quit. And I'm not going to turn around. And I'm not going to compromise. I'm not going to mess up here. Like, I not only start well, but I want to finish well, and with God's help and God's grace, come on, I'm gonna make it through the middle.
Thank you for listening today. We hope that you enjoyed today's teaching. If you'd like to help support this podcast, give today and help spread messages all over the world. Download our app and select give, or go to cc.church/give. Thanks and have a great week.